I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Carol. She survived a skydiving accident. Let's talk about it.
Crazy. Sometimes when she has a few glasses of wine, it starts to percolate.
My closest friends in Toronto were ones that I grew up with that were Cape Bretoners. So, like, all my social time was with Cape Bretoners. I think that's why I kept it.
It's so thick.
My favorite part is that on podcasts, accents like that really stand out.
Gosh.
In a great way. It's just like it adds this extra layer of, like,
dude, who doesn't love accents?
That's great. They're great.
Mm-hmm. And what's funny is that even
Mark Hennick, you could pick up this slight Cape Breton accent every once in a while. But it was just, I don't know, so charming. I really loved it.
Like a little slur.
Yeah.
Like he's drunk. I'm just kidding. Like he's just a little drunk.
Oh, God.
I used to always have, every summer I'd have a friend of mine from Glace Bay stay with me when I was in a hockey camp with him, where we'd be in a hockey camp together, and he'd always stay with me when he came down. And in this camp, like when I was coming up, there was a lot of good hockey players coming out of Cape Breton. And so this camp was like half and half. It was like half people from wherever in Nova Scotia, like a lot of people from Halifax, and then like some from Yarmouth area and Pictou, and then a lot from Cape Breton. And so the dressing room was always like half Cape Breton. And at the end of the week, I would have a little accent. Yeah. And people would be like, Taylor, what? Why are you talking like that? And I'm like, what?
You're talking like what?
like that, dude.
Yeah.
Definitely don't.
Oh, me lucky charms.
Hearty, hearty, her.
So, Carol, this is, okay. I want to preface this entire thing with a quick little story. We never actually talked about this on the podcast yet, but not too long ago, we did this episode, which has now aired. It's already been out. People have listened to it. So if you're listening to this now, you might remember our episode that we did at Algonquin College.
Say that again.
It's too much in my mouth. Algonquin.
There you go.
Yeah, got it. Nice. Algonquin College with a young woman who got into a horrible car accident. And in that conversation, she was talking about how she severely fractured her ankles to the point where the tops of her feet were kind of plastered to her shin.
What was that called again?
I forget, but we'll...
Richard fracture or something like that.
And anyway, as she's going into that in the live show, there was this young woman in the front row. We didn't find this out until after, but this young woman was so grossed out that she got up, left the show, walked out into the hallway of this like venue we were at, and fainted, passed out face down in the hallway because she was so queasy.
We described the fracture very viscerally.
You didn't see pictures of it?
No, we described it, and then we talked about showing pictures of it. The audience reaction led us to not show photos of it.
But no, it was actually the fact that I couldn't find a bad enough one.
I couldn't
really
find any, and I was like really good. I was like gung-ho. I want to see these gnarly fucking photos. Anyway, that talk was enough to get her. So, and she's okay. Everyone, she's totally okay. She's the sister of a friend of mine. That's how we found out after. But I think that gives us a little bit of fucking street cred in the live show game. Mm-hmm. You know, like a movie hits Sundance, a horror film,
and someone and like has a heart attack, and yeah. they're like, boom, that's our headline for like our next like month of advertising.
Does that happen?
Yes, dude. Yeah, dude. Yeah, man. We should start.
Horror
movie
heart attacks.
Yeah, movie heart Sometimes. Attacks, movie faintings, like you know, horror like movies vomiting fuck and people up. Yeah, throwing. Yeah, up.
It's so, like they love that.
I think we need to start promoting our live shows. Like. Yeah. Get ready to get fucked up.
Like, we should have an advisory on all of our live show tickets, like possible fainting. Like
are you susceptible symptoms, to fainting?
Symptoms include.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, so the reason I brought that up is because I feel like this episode might trigger a little bit of, like, anxiety in a few people because we're going to talk about something that most people who this happens to probably don't get to talk about it after it's happened. Carol, what the fuck happened to you?
Okay, so on September 7th, 1997, I went skydiving for the first time. It was my boyfriend at the time's birthday, and this is what we were doing to celebrate. A very long story short.
Yeah.
I jumped out of the plane, which I do not remember. My main parachute was malfunctioned. And the only reason I knew it was malfunctioned besides feeling terrified was because I wore one-ray radio on my head. So I had, like, my trainer. I had, like, 3 hours of training, and we were, like, falling asleep during the training. It was really bogus. But the cue that you would hear if things go wrong was look, thumb, pull. So the idea is if you're in trouble and you need to pull the reserve parachute, what you do is you look to your left and grab your thumb on the ring and you pull the reserve parachute. So when I pulled it, all I saw was cords coming out. And what happened was the reserve parachute and the main parachute, they tangled in each other and completely collapsed. So I have a video of it. I'm not sure if you're going to link it or not somewhere. I can send you a clean copy of it.
Well, I actually haven't seen it yet.
We're actually going to play it right now.
Whoa, wait. Is like, are you okay with watching it?
Oh, I make jokes about it.
Okay. Wonderful.
Like, cool. I got to go on with life.
Because you guys never saw it yet,
I haven't
right?
seen no. it. I haven't
okay,
seen it.
We're going to watch it right now. If you are listening at home, you're going to hear the audio, so you're not going to see much. But if you want to watch along with us, just simply Google Carol Murray Rodriguez plus skydiving, and it'll be the first video that comes up. So while we watch this, why don't you kind of like talk us through
a play by play?
Yeah, a little like play by play.
But so. Do it in like your best sports commentator's voice.
I don't know about that.
She goes, to pull the reserve.
Do that. Okay, here we go.
It's kind of funny thinking of somebody sports commentating their own skydiving accident.
You know, it's really funny because I, up until...
So here we go. We're watching it now.
Up until January, I had not seen this video for about 19 years. This year, it was 20 years since the accident, and I could... And so
here's the plane.
Yeah.
You're flying over, you're about 5,000 feet up, right?
3,200 feet.
32, okay.
So that's a kilometer or two CN towers.
Okay. Now, it looks like here, boom, parachutes out.
Yeah, so it does, but if you see that I'm flailing, what happened was the cords was in the middle of it, like at the top, it was like over the top of it. It was like through the middle.
Right. Are they concerned right now?
Yeah,
you can hear
people,
them in the background.
Listen to them, listen to what they say.
Oh, wow.
Listen
to
what they
said.
Cut away. I'm saying cut away.
Now, if you cut away, would and that's it. That's a bit. So, okay, for people listening at home, the video's over. You don't actually see Carol hit the ground.
No,
luckily.
Thankfully.
But I guess, like,
God. Dude, the dumbest lottery winners ever. Dude, screw this episode. Let's watch this.
Yeah, let's watch the next automatic video that pops up.
Wait, so is that, but
it's
kind
of funny.
But wait, that is like very ironic that the next video is the dumbest lottery winners ever.
And I was like, is that foreshadowing?
Yeah.
Did win.
But I guess we never really said, but you hit the ground.
Yes, I did. I went 3.5 inches into the ground.
Holy shit.
So I fell in this elderly lady's front yard. she was sitting on her step having a cup of tea.
Whoa.
So I say I dropped in for tea.
Wow.
That is one of the most fucked up things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
All this old woman just drinking tea
on her
and
step.
Then this woman drops in her yard. Out of the fucking
I'm imagining like the Hulk, like when the Hulk drops out of the sky and like makes a crater, but then he gets out as Bruce,
Bruce Banner. The superhero landing.
And he's like, and then he gets out and he's like all groggy and he's like, oh, what happened? Oh God, his clothes are all ripped and he just kind of gets up and walks away and the person's standing there with their mouth wide open going, what the fuck?
Except instead, Carol was just literally stuck 3.5 inches into the ground.
Well, let's rewind for a second. Again, just for the people that couldn't see it. So essentially what it looked like was you open the parachute and at some point, you know, obviously it's tangled. There's something wrong, but it still looks very normal like the ground. But then all of a sudden in the video, the parachute that is supposed to be this nice, big, like, you know, cushion looking thing turns into like a deflated condom, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you just start to plummet at like
90 kilometers an hour.
Holy fuck. 90.
That's what I hit the ground at. That's what Transport Canada estimated based by the shape that the parachute was in. Yeah. So when you see that it collapsed, that's when I pulled the reserve chute and the first one's supposed to fly away, but they didn't. They tangled and collapsed.
So would you have been?
So you actually pulled the reserve?
I did.
Reserve?
Yeah, I did, and it malfunctioned.
Would you have been better? Would you have been better off if you didn't pull the reserve?
Yes.
Whoa.
Crazy.
Well, unless it, but I couldn't control it. So maybe we were really close to the 400 in Ontario. So I mean, I could have went on a big highway, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. But you would have fallen slower.
Slower. Yeah.
And in a way where you might have like broken your legs, maybe?
Yes, or
like,
broken an ankle.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because if I would have fell 3 feet any other way, I would have been dead. I was 3 feet from a brick house on one side, 3 feet from a paved driveway, 3 feet from a big, thick tree, like a maple or an oak tree, and then 3 feet from like these big cable wires that were like from the 1930s that you would see. They were huge.
Mm-hmm. So you're extremely accurate.
I was, yeah, in my paratrooping. So, it was really scary. I really remember hearing so the first thing I remember is panic, and I remember feeling the wind. The wind was really, really strong. And when I watched the video, I see why, because I'm twirling around.
Yeah.
And I really remember the man's voice saying, look, thumb, pull, look, thumb, pull. Like, he wasn't just telling me to look, thumb, pull. He was screeching, look, thumb, pull. I could
tell. In the radio.
Yeah, the one-way radio, and he couldn't hear me. So I remember thinking, oh, fuck God, I'm going to die, and my body relaxing, fainting. That's what I thought. But the police reports and witnesses and my friend that was there, they could hear me screaming all the way to the ground.
Right. Wow. So, and I guess once you hit the ground, were you semi-conscious, conscious?
Yeah, I don't remember, but yes, right. I was. I have vague recollection of the paramedic saying, wiggle your toes and saying, good girl. But I don't know if that's because people told me. Or if I actually remember.
So that jump, man. When you make that jump from 3,000 feet, that is, I have a little bit of experience with skydiving. You don't have, you have like a split second of drop time. You jump and then you pull right away, basically, right?
Well, there's a contraption that pulls it for you. It has this little parachute. Yeah.
Right.
The wind pulls it open.
But there's no free fall time at that height.
No.
Yeah. I think this is important to explain because I told a couple of people about this. And I explained the video, and a number of them were like, well, wait, you can't solo dive on your first time. But I'm with you, Taylor. I think we did the exact same thing. Did you tandem dive or did you solo?
I tandem dove twice from 10,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when you go, you can go solo first time.
I did the solo.
You have to do the course,
well.
Though.
Yeah. So you do like you said, a 3 or 4 hour course.
Yeah.
And this is something that anyone can do at any point. You can just go to, Waterville or whatever.
Maybe now, too.
I think you can in Waterville. I did not too long ago. And you basically take a course on how to steer while you're in the air, like how to release the emergency procedures, yada, yada. They fly you up here. They fly you up 5,000, which is why I assumed it was 5 in the video.
Mm-hmm.
And like a base jumper, you know how a base jumper has that pilot chute? That little parachute that's the size of like their head.
This is exactly
what
it
was. They hold it and then they jump and they throw it out to the side, and then that pilot chute
pulls
the rest of the chute out.
Right.
I think it's called a pilot chute.
It is.
Okay, sweet.
From my memory.
So you throw it out and it pulls your whole chute out. So really you free fall for like 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's maybe, what they told us.
And then your chute comes out, and then basically you're just parachuting down.
Mm-hmm. In my opinion, super lame to solo the first time because there's no free fall.
There is no free fall, but there is something, like, you missed out on this, but there is something very beautiful about guiding yourself down on this parachute when it opens up right.
And, yeah, way to rub it in. She never got to experience this.
And you get to go down nice and slow, and you see all, it's beautiful. But you're right, and if you want to experience the big one, you do what Tay does, which is tandem, which you're basically like
you go
baby Bjorned to another human.
Yeah, it's very comforting.
And you both jump out and you free fall for what, like 2 minutes?
No, 30 seconds, I think.
Oh, okay.
Two minutes would be like 25,000 feet.
I think.
For me, it was about independence. It was, I'm not going on someone's back. I'm going to learn how to do this on my own.
Right, yeah. So it is an option. It's a thing that you can do.
And then once you do that first jump solo, then you do more and more jumps, and you can gradually graduate to
that's how
higher,
you become a skydiver.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're like, I want to skydive. That's like, that would be your first step.
Yeah. So what is your, you said you don't remember jumping out, and obviously you don't remember the part where you're screaming all the way down because you've basically made peace ish with your death.
Dude, that's fucking crazy.
Which is, that's a fairly rare experience.
Well, she doesn't remember screaming all the way, but she was screaming all the way
that's
down.
That's what I mean. She doesn't. Right.
Yeah.
So you said that she basically made peace with her death, but she was screaming.
When I said, oh, fuck.
Well,
God,
yeah. Or she thought
die.
She, okay. she thought,
fuck God, I'm going to
yeah,
die.
Yeah, I'm going to die.
And thought she just passed.
And then, but what was really happening was you were screaming, but as far as you knew, but up until, when you are hearing this, is it sheer panic, or is it a moment of clarity where you're like, if I don't make the right decision in this moment, then I might be dead?
No, it was sheer panic. Ooh. Later on in my story, I almost died again because of complications. Mm-hmm. And that's when I had a moment of clarity. But this moment was just sheer panic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happened then when you hit the ground? Like, how fucked up were you?
I just want to back up a little bit, if that's okay. Because I think it's really important to talk a little bit about listening to your gut and to your instincts. This happened on a Sunday at about 4 o'clock. We originally
went. So it's because you didn't go to church. This is why this happened. This was God was smiting you because you didn't show up to church that day.
Well, God was smiting because I didn't listen to him. Yeah, right. So we went on the Saturday and we had the training on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. It was actually Lady Di's funeral. And after the training, it rained. It rained like we had never seen rain before. And by the time the rain stopped, they decided, I think there was 8 of us in the class. They were deciding who goes when. So we didn't have kids to go home to. We weren't in any hurry. So we were going to go last. So we were watching our classmates jump. And then it was our turn. And the airport was like 10 minutes away that we went from. Mm-hmm. So we were at the point where we were jumping in this little Cessna. And they were like, no, it's too dark. You have to come back tomorrow. So then we went home. Then we come back the next morning and we get in the plane in this little Cessna, like just crouching down. And we could only get like 2,300 feet. And the pilot and the instructor were arguing with each other. She was the business owner. And the pilot was saying, we can't go in. No, I can't go further. It's too dangerous. And you can't drop them here. It's too low.
Can't go.
Was it too windy or why couldn't they go
clouds,
higher?
The clouds.
Oh, okay. So for people who don't know, a Cessna is like a very small plane. Like
there was like a pilot and 4 of us crouched in the back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we landed in that plane.
Oh, okay. So you came down.
Yeah, we landed in the plane. So that was the second time that we went to go and we couldn't go. So in that van on the way back to the school, I said to her, I'm not doing this. I said, this is a sign. If there's ever a sign, I'm not supposed to do this.
Oh,
now,
no.
Keep in mind, they lied to me. They told me that they were in business for over 10 years. They were in business for less than a year. They were in, they worked at other businesses for over 10 years, but not their business, which is really crucial when you think about stability of organizations. And if they provided me an opportunity to jump and I backed out, I don't get my money. It was only $200. Like that wouldn't be a deal breaker for me.
Mm.
But So if I would have backed out because I wasn't given the opportunity to jump, they would have gave me my money back.
They would have.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So she convinced me to go. And I like through things afterwards, we did learn that at the time, 20 years ago, this was the only one case that ever won in court. And it was because they convinced someone to go that just changed.
You were the only,
no, there had been one. So after my fall, the lawyer that I had, which is another story we can get to later, right, too, they only found one court case where someone was successful. And the reason that they were successful was because the people tried to back out and the owners convinced them to go.
Right. And all you need is one precedent and it's very similar. Ooh. So, okay. Well, yeah, we can get to that.
That's another chunk. Yeah. Yeah. So wake up in the hospital. That's what you guys are asking next, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you go 3 inches into the ground and then is it just like, I know you don't remember this, but from what you were told, were you waiting there for a while? Like, did that lady shit herself and have a heart attack and die?
I don't know. I went to see her 3 years later, but she was about 3 years later, but she was after selling her house.
Okay.
And the people had just filled the hole a week before. Right. They bought the house. So,
It left like that much of a mark?
I don't know how big it was. It was mostly my leg that came out, like, as my leg came right out. So when I landed, my legs took the brunt. Luckily, my femurs. So my left femur broke in two. The two places snapped. My right femur came right out, like it, and pinned through the ground. So there was.
Wait, you mean like a compound fracture came out as in blasted through your?
You know what that is?
I read that in an article, and it staked itself into the ground. Is that right?
Yes, that's yes. It staked itself into the ground and like ripped apart. So.
Oh.
Whoa. Yeah,
like a tent stake.
Wait. What's the bottom part of your leg? Is it just like flat
hanging
on the ground?
Out? Yeah, a pit. I remember asking my friend who was there, and yeah, it was like bent backwards, like a Barbie doll's leg.
And then you're like sharded bone is out of your body,
yes,
and into the earth,
dude. Yes. This is the part where people pass out.
Oh my god, you were like a human shrub,
Jared,
like a tree.
Jared, did you get that Hall of Meat video I sent you on Monday?
No, I didn't. What is that?
I sent you.
I did. Yeah, the Hall of Meat. Yeah, I didn't watch it. Because I know he snapped his ankle really badly.
Oh.
Hall of Meat is a horrible, horrible Instagram account of skateboard accidents. And like some of them are really like America's Funniest Home Videos kind of esque. And you're like, oh, he got him right in the balls, you know, like that kind of thing. And then some of them are like, wow, that guy will never walk the same again because his ankle literally just exploded into a trillion pieces.
I tagged you and Jeff in it. And Jeff texted me
I almost
after
it
was
you.
Like, thanks for ruining
that's
my
right
week
because
already.
The last time we got into a deep Hall of Meat hole was at his apartment.
Anyway, so you basically planted yourself.
Yes
into the earth.
Yes,
with your femur snapped off, femur bone.
Yes. So I don't know how long it took, but think about the guy in the plane. He was my like really close friends for 10 years. We had just started dating 3 months before. He knew my family since the time we were like 13 years old. There he is. It's his birthday. There's his girlfriend who was also his close friend for 10 years, falling through the sky.
Right? Yeah.
So he tried to jump out, but obviously they weren't thinking he could save me or something, but obviously he couldn't.
That'd be super impressive.
So, yeah. So he had to land. He landed in the plane and had to come find me, you know, watch the chaos of all these people around me and the ambulance come take me. The ambulance, I think he went in the ambulance and they brought me to like a smaller regional hospital and they stabilized me.
Yeah, they were like, what the fuck? Don't take her here. This is insane.
It seems inconvenient.
I think they stabilized me. I had a chest tube because I had a punctured lung. So I think they might have popped in a chest tube. So then he had to call my mother's house and my sister and tell them
just
what happened.
Devastated.
So, keeping in mind, they thought I was okay because I was supposed to go on Saturday and I never called them to tell them different. My mother was sitting in the bingo hall in New Waterford and talking to her friend.
Classic New Waterford activity.
She was sitting with someone that happened to say, how's Carol doing? And my mother said, oh, I'm going to kill her. She was gone skydiving yesterday and she was supposed to call me and she didn't. But I didn't hear from her, so I guess she's okay. Not a minute later, the people that run the bingo at the Army Navy in New Waterford tapped her shoulder and said, Brenda, there's been an accident and you have to go home.
Oh, no.
And at that time, they didn't know what was going on. Like, they didn't know if I was alive, if I was dead, if I was going to walk. They didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So my mother goes home into Waterford, and all the aunts and uncles go, and the priest is there, and the house is full. Meanwhile, my sister, who lived in Whitby, Ontario, she had to drive to Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto, which is near the, not far from the 401. Her and, you know, the friend I jumped with and another friend, there was about five or six people at the hospital waiting to see what happened. So she gets to the hospital around 7. She didn't find out until 6 or 7 in the morning if I was going to live.
Shit, there's like no like Twitter or Insta stories. So like nobody's like sending out.
This is like pre-flip phone days.
Nobody had a cell phone.
This is like, hey,
yeah,
get off the phone. I'm trying to log into my email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, so we weren't even there at that point with email.
Give us like a full body, head to toe rundown. What
injuries
it happened to you?
So I broke both my femurs. You know, it's really funny. I just got my records from the hospital. I only learned in January that my left femur broke in two places.
Is that really funny?
That really made me laugh because I have pain and I'm like, why does this hurt in two places? Now I know why.
Do you have a brother or sister?
I have one of each.
You didn't use either of their health card, did you, by any chance?
No, why?
I've just been trying it's a problem. It's irrelevant right now. But anyway, carry on.
So broke both my femur, my left femur in two places. My right femur was a compound fracture, as we discussed. Mm-hmm. I broke my pelvis. I broke ribs, most of my ribs. I chipped vertebrae in the bottom of my back and some up the top. And I punctured my lung. I have a little scar under my chin from the strap of the helmet.
Oh, crazy.
It's very, very like high-speed car accident.
Yes.
Well, yeah, dude. I mean, 90 kilometers per hour going straight into the ground. That's like
impact of a car.
That's like getting in a accident.
That's like two cars going 45 kilometers an hour in each direction.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wait a minute.
I would have said 45. I knew it. I knew the
math. The helmet, though. What type of helmet were you wearing?
I don't know.
Because
it like, was a parachute helmet.
What type of helmet are
no,
you wearing?
Because
it had a strap.
Right, but have you guys okay. like the helmets that Taylor, you and Jer wore?
Oh, they weren't helmets.
They're like leather, like hats.
They were thin plastic. But yeah, basically.
I thought we had like leather.
Yeah,
hats.
We didn't even wear helmets.
Well, this is actually a perfect segue. I'm curious to know if any of this. I'm about to play something else. Listeners at home, you can actually just listen to this one. You don't have to watch it. But we're going to show Carol something. I want to know if this resonates with you whatsoever. So just give me a second here. I'm going to bring this up.
I don't know what this is. Just
me neither.
Skydiving was definitely the scariest thing I've ever done. Let me ask you this question in regards to the skydiving. What is the point of the helmet in the skydiving?
Yeah.
I mean, can you kind of make it? You jump out of that plane, that chute doesn't open. The helmet is now wearing you for protection. Later on, the helmet's talking with the other helmets, going, it's a good thing he was there or I would have hit the ground directly. You never jump out of a plane unless you got a human being strapped underneath you. That's basic safety.
But that's true though. That point is
like, really funny.
Like most people,
I hope we can clear that. I hope that's
are in a skydiving accident. They don't live
first.
They don't live to tell.
We were having this conversation when Jeremy said one of you guys sent a message. We have a little group chat and said, hey, did you guys see the application that just came in? This woman fell from a plane skydiving, and I was like, whoa, holy shit. And Jeremy said, well, look up this name. Looked up the name. And then I was like researching stats and like, you know, how often does this happen and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, wow, it's fascinating because the stats, it's so rare for somebody to have out of all of the people who are skydiving in North America every year, the stats point to it being very improbable that you will have an accident. And then I was like, and even further to that, to be able to talk about it.
Well, that's what I said at the very beginning of this episode. It's like, it's fucking crazy that you are here to talk about this because
I know
you talk to any, well, When was the last time you talked to anyone who jumped out of a plane and their parachute didn't work?
I know. Well, I met someone else.
Did you really?
Yeah, but the Air Reserve worked a bit and they broke their ankle and they were in the hospital.
Right.
There was a woman in the U.S. about 2 years after me that fell in a bunch of bees, and the stinging of the bees might have helped her somehow.
What? But are you serious?
Yeah, it was in People magazine.
She fell out of a plane into a nest of bees.
Yeah, and that's what they think, that the shock of the bees is what saved her.
And she never hit the ground. She just landed on the bees and the bees flew her away. And
but you know what?
They never saw her again.
Dude, it kind of goes.
That is
so absurd.
That is in the realm of farce.
But think about it. I know, dude. That's mad TV.
But think about it though. Like you said yourself, Carol, that like where you landed was so like close to being.
Yeah, like you could
basically killing you, right?
Yeah,
Of course. Yes,
so you had to land in the perfect spot.
Yes.
The person who landed in the bees, like they landed in
the perfect spot.
Yeah.
If it didn't rain those 2 days, I'm telling you right now,
if I had jumped and I was falling and knew I was falling like to basically almost my death, and then I see that I'm falling into bees, the first thing that goes through my head is, oh, I'm definitely dead now. Like, I'm falling into a bunch of bees and falling from the sky.
Well, she fell into a pit of lions, and thank God the lions were so nurturing. They just nursed her back to health. It's like, holy shit. But, dude, I thought for sure the lions was certain death.
I think if I was falling into a bunch of bees, I'd be like, well, you know, at least I'm not going to be alive to feel their stings because I'm definitely going to die falling out of this plane.
At least I'll taste like honey in my death.
It's pretty, I know that there's so much, the bulk of this story is how you move on from this and how it affects your life.
You're right.
And it is so hard to move on from the accident because
it's so bananas.
Yeah.
Well, it gets more bananas.
Well, let's do that. Let's get into that.
I will say that I'm the only story that I've found of someone that has survived an accident like this and regrew their femur.
Wait, what?
What? Okay, so what does regrowing and what kind, like how much needed to grow?
16 centimeters. Almost the whole
thing.
That's
a lot.
Yeah.
So you're like a salamander.
That's like that.
I was trying to get the old x-rays, but they don't have them. I wonder if my surgeon does because it was pretty unique at the time. I just have the radiology reports. So I mentioned what happened to my leg. So let's go back a bit from when I woke up and I was like, oh, what's going on? I have to work tomorrow. Can someone call my work? And they're like, Carol, I think you should have better concerns than that. And I was like, oh, am I going to be able to have babies? And they were just like, don't ask that right now. And then I was like, am I going to walk? What happened to me? And they said, you broke both your legs. And I was like, well, where's my casts? And I was told.
You're like, your legs are so fucking broke that we don't even know. Yeah, casts will not do shit.
Exactly, right? So at the time, when I first woke up, they thought it would be 6 to 12 weeks recovery. So I had 6 to 12 weeks.
That seems short.
Very fast. Yeah.
Right? Because, well, the problem was, so the left femur was, they put a rod in it and, you know, the pins in the knee and the hip and a rod right up. It's still in there.
Mm-hmm.
The right femur, they had a rod in there and they had plates to keep it together.
And they pulled it out of the dirt and washed it off a little bit. And
yeah, exactly. So I went to surgery almost every second day to clean it and keep it clean.
Ooh,
yeah, really?
Because there was literally dirt and bugs in there and then infections.
Oh,
so,
right.
As like they tried every second day, but sometimes like I'd be at the end of the day if there was room in the surgical time for me to go in after they did all the hip replacements, whatever orthopedic surgeon was on would do that. So, you know, in the hospital, in the trauma unit was so traumatic. It was incredibly traumatic, like so traumatic. I had nightmares over it over the years. But because I didn't know what was going on, I was just in all this pain. And every day they would like take me here, take me there. I couldn't sit up. Like my family like was trying to be positive and happy. But then if they thought I was asleep, I would see them crying. Like
they thinking you might be dead?
No, my leg was supposed to be amputated at the hip.
Oh,
well, really?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because of the infections and everything?
Yeah, because of the infection. And
but they continued. They were like, well, maybe we can.
They were trying, right?
Right, okay.
So,
okay.
And then, like, I didn't know. They were hiding it from me. So I was, like, signing forms for, like, disability income and stuff. And my mother would wait until they'd give me a shot of painkillers, and I didn't know what I was doing. And she would say, sign this. And I would say, what is it? And she said, I just sign the damn thing. And I'd be right out of her signing the thing.
That sounds illegal.
I don't know if it's illegal, but it's funny how this is why, what's it called? Like first directives or
advanced directives.
Thank you. Are like so important and stuff like that, because families and family members and loved ones get so fucking wacky when people are about to die, or people are really sick and it looks like their death is coming soon, or like people just don't react or like make decisions that are maybe for the best. Like, it's probably not the best decision to wait till you're fucked up.
Well, no,
you on what's going on, or even to hold things from you from your own knowledge. Yeah. You know, like,
looking back, I was okay with it because I respect what you're saying completely. Mm. And I've dealt with sick family members afterwards, and I haven't held back things from them. But for me at the time, I wouldn't have been able to handle it.
Right.
They needed me to stay strong to keep my leg, because they were saying she's not going to lose her leg. It was really funny because, I mean, your femoral artery, if you pop that, you're dead.
Well, I was wondering how did that not get severed in this
exactly?
Fucking
so the fact that I didn't sever my the artery in my thigh is crazy.
It was just pure luck.
Exactly. Or divine intervention, depending on who you speak to, right?
Which would have basically meant you'd be dead in minutes.
Exactly. If you had severed it. Exactly. And then, given the state of my thigh and my femur, like, every 2 days they would take me for scans of the bottom of my leg. They didn't understand why everything was circulating and working fine on the bottom. Because the top was such a mess, the bottom circulation should have been fucked.
Right. How was it?
It was fine. It was functioning as if there was nothing going on.
Just like the blood vessels, everything the channels was fine. Were just
no
like,
clogs. Everything was working fine. Everything was pumping.
Okay, wow. Well, wait. Okay. What were your feet okay?
Yeah, my feet were fine.
How the fuck did you land?
Dude, you probably landed on your
I think I landed like
knee or something.
I landed on my feet, but my back didn't take it. The femurs did.
Right.
Oh, so your feet hit the ground.
So your knees are probably
hurt
bent.
Them a bit. Yeah, but the femur like, just the like, pressure just yeah, the femur like, just goes pop, snap out.
You know when you take a stick and you hit it on the ground, it snaps part way up, not at the bottom.
Yeah.
Think of it like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy fuck.
So that's crazy. So you didn't break any bones in your feet or your ankles?
No, nothing.
That
or my tibular fibula, nor my knee. My knee's a bit messy now because it's all connected there.
Which is crazy because, like, your femur is, what is that, the biggest bone in the body?
Yes.
It's a big-ass bone, yeah.
It is, and it's important for circulation and all that kind of stuff.
But again, also think about it, too, like, just because it's the longest bone in the body. So, yeah, the biggest bone. But, like, just because it's long doesn't mean that it's...
But it's probably
necessarily
meant,
the strongest.
I mean, it's big, but it's also meant to take the biggest load.
Right.
So in a high impact scenario, I mean, and this is total bro science. I'm just making this up.
No, I'm totally with you.
Because it's so strong, it's meant to bear a huge load. So when you have a high impact thing, it's meant to take a lot of that, which is probably why it's most likely to be the thing that snaps. I'm just made up.
So they think, all right, we can pretend we're going to try to save her leg. We're going to try to save her leg.
So
worst case scenario,
on,
we
cut
it
at
off.
The hip. So this went on for probably almost 3 weeks. It I didn't catch on until about 3 or 4 days before a plan was made. I was in surgery and I was like, you know, I was 24. I'd never been in the hospital before. And like, I would go down to surgery. Sometimes I'd be awake. Sometimes I'd be asleep. But I would look in. And I mean, this was orthopedic surgery, guys. This is carpentry, right? Like, I would look in at other surgeons and I would see the drills and... And like, all I can think is, oh my God, that's coming for me. Ooh. So like, I remember one day I was down there and I was screeching and screeching and screeching in the hallway waiting to go into the OR. And the orthopedic surgeon's like, you have to calm down. I don't know if you, like, he's like, we're trying to save your leg here. You need to relax. And I was like, save my leg? What are you talking about?
Because you have no clue that it's even at risk now.
No,
I didn't know. Yeah. I just thought it was all part of the plan.
Right. Crazy.
So, and then I had that surgery, and then I went back upstairs, and I mentioned it to my family, and they're like, no, they're going to save it. They're going to save it. And then the nurses for a couple of days were trying to prepare me. And then this a resident was all excited. He came in. He's like, oh, my God. At the time, I was really young and fit at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was really like muscular. I was always at the gym, and that really had made a big difference. Mm-hmm. So I remember the young resident came in, and he was all excited because he was on a conference call with the top orthopedic surgeons across the country and how they were going to save my leg. So ended up being there was this amazing surgeon at Sunnybrook Hospital. I used to say his name, but now I don't anymore because I don't want him to get a million calls.
Right.
But if he happens to be listening, he's my hero.
What's his name rhyme with?
So he came in and he told me what they were going to do. Typically in the past, they had only done it with like a centimeter or two, never 16 centimeters. So, you know, when you break your bone, they set it and dot, 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 new cells fill in and it repairs your bone.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of on... with that theory in mind. So the plan was to remove 16 centimeters, but it ended up, right? And then I would have a 16 centimeter nothing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Gap.
A gap, bone, yeah. Right. And then at the top, the little piece that they could save, that little inch coming off the hip, they would crack that a little bit. And I had these screws going through my leg, and four times a day, I would move this little tooth of a bone that was cracked off. I would move it a quarter of a millimeter four times a day. So I would move it down.
Like it would grow down.
It would slide down. It would slide. So pretend this is my hip right here. Yeah, and yeah. This is the bone and there's my knee, right?
Yeah.
So this was cracked off and I would just move it down a millimeter a day. And
oh, the crack. They would move the crack
I would move,
itself.
Yeah, the crack, like wait, where the crack was. Wait, like I would move that down.
You're saying I would move like you were,
yeah,
you
I
were
had
doing
a,
it?
I had a wrench.
You physically were doing it.
What the fuck?
I had a wrench. Oh, yeah. Oh, So wait.
So because people are listening to this and we're watching you like very, you know, you're using your body to like show us and stuff and people can't see it. But so literally there was a small piece of bone that they had chipped off at the top of where they cut your bone off.
You're better explaining this than me.
But so
I'm
trying to explain it back to you so that people are listening are really understanding it.
Yeah.
And they're all like, we got it the first time she said it. No, I'm kidding. Most don't. It's kind of important.
So the chip itself was taken off so that it can, it's the thing that's growing the bone.
Like that's moving down. Like, yeah. It didn't grow like a tooth.
No, right. But like they're using that chip to be the thing that's stimulating the growth.
Well, I move it down and new cells fill in behind because there was nothing there.
Exactly. Right.
So it's the idea that like the same way that like if you broke your bone and there was like a millimeter space between them, it would grow back together, fuse over time.
Yeah, with
but they're basically using this little piece, this chip to like kind of guide it slowly down.
Exactly. The further they move the chip down or the piece down,
yeah.
The bone that's broken kind of fills in to that chip.
Because it's a little
spot. And
then
you're like, all right, it's filled in, move it down another inch.
It's yeah, like so every day a millimeter.
And then it fills in. Yeah. That is the fucking craziest thing.
And I
thing.
Have like scars that are like an inch long of flesh because I remember it was like a pin and a screw and I had to move it down.
Do you understand now? Do you get it?
More or less.
So
yeah.
It's like
so
coaxing
how do you,
a dog
how
like
do you wrench it down. Like what's that process like?
So
is
the
it a
first
crank?
Thing I had was called this, it was called an Elizaroff. It's like these big rings.
A what?
It was called an Elizaroff.
Elizaroff.
Yeah, that was the name of the surgeon that first designed this, and it was first designed for kids. It was also used a lot for dwarfism.
Okay.
To make legs bigger, and they call it stretching the bone. It's not really stretching it, but that's how people think of it, right?
Yeah.
So there was this weird clicker thing on it. I would just move this thing that would click around. It was, I don't know how it was,
like a ratchet almost.
Yeah,
or
like a ratchet. Yeah, and I would just click it. Once every whatever.
And is that painful when you move the bone?
No, but it would go through. It was attached. Like at the first thing I had on, there was a pin that went through the top of my leg in through there. So as I move this every day, it would slice through my leg.
Oh God, fucking
but it,
shit!
But it was only a little bit when it was here. It was only like you know, like maybe 2 millimeters of flesh that I was going through or something. It wasn't that much flesh then.
Still kind of fucking crazy,
dude. Yeah.
No, it gets worse.
But is it muscle? But is it going through
worse?
Muscle as well?
Well, I don't really have a lot of muscle because the quadricep mostly was ripped away.
Fucking blew that thing.
Oh
out.
Jesus! You dude, didn't mention that part.
Yeah, the quadricep.
I know.
Gone.
I guess it shot out of her body.
It kind of looks a little bit different. I got. There used to be like a big bowl in my leg. They actually. I only reg- regrew 14 centimeters because I didn't have enough muscle. And-
only. I only regrew 14 centimeters.
So I do have one leg longer than the other.
By
so,
two, it's crazy. By 2 centimeters?
I was at soccer last Sunday night, and I got kneed in the quad, and like I had a Charlie horse for a bit, and I was like, oh, man.
This is the worst thing ever.
Like 2 days later, I'm like, oh, it still hurts.
As my mother would say, at least you can feel it. Yeah. When I would be in pain in the hospital, my leg, she'd be like, Carol, be grateful that you can feel it.
True that.
True that. Holy shit.
I'd probably punch somebody in the face
if they said that, but but very true.
My mom has been through more adversity than anybody you could ever imagine. She's been through... Oh. So she's like the most strongest positive person, and that's what pulled me through. So, yeah, there's just so many layers to my story. So basically... I had this one thing, and then after, so then I moved on out of the trauma unit, and I went to rehab. It was a total of almost 3 months in the trauma unit before I went to rehab. And then when I got to rehab, after about a week, I went back to the hospital to see the surgeon, and it wasn't working. Because remember, they had never done this big of a space before. This was totally new.
Yeah.
And right, so
they'd never grown this much bone back.
But the problem was it wasn't stable, right? Because I remember the first time I went for an x-ray after my surgery. And I mean, there were always really professional there. But the x-ray technician, when he put the film up, he yelled, "Holy fuck, what are they going to put in there?"
Jesus.
Because there was like a big space in my, like, you know, there was four... 14 centimeters, like there was no bone there. So they did have a rod in there, but it wasn't stabilized. It was like shifting. It wasn't stable, and it wasn't working. And I was very lucky because there was a research fellow at Sunnybrook who was kind of doing a little 3 month or 4 month visit rotation from Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto at Sunnybrook. And he said that they had taken this ELISA off technology, and they kind of took it another step further. And so, long story short, they took the rings off and they put this big sidebar on, like it was a big black. So what they did was there was two pins that went through the side of my leg into my knee, here and here. I still have the scars. Mm-hmm. The pins were probably as big as my index finger.
So not small.
Not small, no. And oh my God, did they ever hurt every time I move my legs. Like, I couldn't even look at my leg for months. So like, that's a whole other...
Trauma-wise.
Yeah, I wouldn't look at it. And if people came in the room, I'd freak out. Maybe I'll talk about what happened, and then we can talk about the emotional effects.
Yeah, it's so layered, right?
Yeah.
So I had this big sidebar, and then in the top of my hip, I had more pins here.
So you mean this bar basically ran from your knee
parallel.
Up to your hip?
Yeah.
Parallel to your femur.
Yes. And there was like two pins in the hip and two pins in the knee keeping it together.
And were you supposed to be walking on this? Or?
At that point, no.
Okay,
no,
you're just laying up.
Just laying up.
But
remember, my left leg, I had to start learning to walk on, like with crutches and stuff, because my left leg, I had to learn how to use again.
Yeah,
right. I mean, I couldn't even sit up for 8 weeks. I had a broken pelvis, right?
Oh, man. So, what do they do about the broken pelvis?
Oh, it just leaved it on its own. Yeah. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't as bad as the... femurs. So now I have that little part of a bone, like the chiclet. I call it the chiclet. And so the side of my leg was a lot more fleshy than the top. That's what I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. So now is when I had the wrench, and I had to move this wrench every a quarter of a millimeter four times a day. So I was literally slicing through like 2 inches of my leg every day.
Oh my fuck.
And it was so gross and disgusting because painful? Painful. It was ripping, it was burning.
Like bloody and
bloody
shit like that.
And
how did it smell? Tell me how it smelled.
Maybe like stinky armpits or something. And like I was so tired of healthcare stuff that I just learned how to clean it all myself. I didn't want to do it. And you know, my family got so used to it. Like my niece was almost 3 when this happened. Like she wanted to participate. So there she'd be, this little toddler full of curls. She looked like Shirley Temple, my niece Shayna. And she would be like using the wrench. She'd come in, "Is it time?" And she would be moving with the wrench and she'd put gloves on and try. I wouldn't let her clean the wound. I would just let her use another part of my leg. Like she was like it was all natural to her and her friends.
This is fucking wild.
I know. It was.
So how long did it take for that process to be done?
So this happened in September, the first accident. The bar on my leg was removed in June.
Okay. Whoa. And by that point, you were like, okay, now I'm ready to rehab this leg?
Well, I was still on crutches. I still needed the crutches or the, and I used a wheelchair for 2 years to go anywhere distance wise, but I could just tap it. Like I couldn't, like it was more and more over time, but there's something really significant that happened in between so I got this new bar, I think like in February-ish. Yeah. So, and then I went home at the beginning of March from rehab. I think it was March, September, October, November.
So were you basically living in the hospital?
Yeah, for 6 months.
Wow.
Between trauma and then the rehab.
Wow.
So when I went home, I would go it was called Handy Trans. Now it's called, what's it called now?
It was called Handy Trans.
Yeah, that's what it was called then. Like, can you imagine being called now?
The wheelchair accessible bus. That name wouldn't fly in 2018.
And I just realized that last month. They were like, "What do you mean Handy Trans? Like that's awful." But that's what it was called then.
The accessible bus, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's what it's called now.
The disability driver.
Yes. Actually, it was really funny because the Handy Trans driver would ask me out all the time. I was really cute back then. I mean, I'm super cute, but I was a hot little number. And he used to ask me out. And he knew I had a boyfriend that lived with me. Like he was dead serious. He would ask me the movies and stuff.
And you're like, do you want to smell my leg?
Yeah, you're like, here, take my wrench.
What do you think now?
Wrench my thigh.
So for about 3 days, I skipped my therapy and I didn't tell my family, but I was in so much pain that I would hold it in until they all went to work and I would just scream all day long. Ugh. And I didn't want to bother my doctor, but like my whole leg, like underneath where there was no bone, was screeching in pain. And I'm like, this is one of those things that you hear about, you know, if someone loses their leg or loses their finger, that's that phantom pain. Mm. I was like, this must be phantom pain because I don't have a bone there. So how can this thing hurt? Remember, they didn't do this much before. So I said, we got to go. I can't handle it anymore. So we went to the hospital for pain relief because we thought whatever, I needed something more serious for pain. So they admitted me and my surgeon came to see me the next day with an x-ray. So remember how the new bone goes dot, 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 like up in that little space behind the chiclet?
Yeah.
Well, all new bone was growing in that big space, dot, 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 like filling in. And so while I was moving this little bone piece down every day, I was crushing all the new bone that was going down.
Oh my God. Okay. Whoa. Okay. So again, this is kind of hard for people just listening, I think. So like, you thought you were moving this little chip of bone down and from the top of the hip, it would fill in and then you'd move down a little further and it would fill in and the bone's just like gradually moving towards your knee. So it all fills in.
Yes.
But what was really happening was there was already bone developing in all of that space that you thought was empty.
Yeah, one cell at a time.
And now you're just fucking running through it with like new, fresh bone.
And that's where the pain comes from.
And that was the screeching pain I was crushing.
So you did. So there must have been, there must have been quite a good gap between x-rays for you to not know that there was bone developing.
Yeah, it was probably a few weeks, I guess. I don't remember, but it was probably a few weeks. Because at that point, I think I was going every month.
Right, because like, I mean, to not know that there was bone developing had to have been. Like,
yeah, I got this new thing on like probably mid-February-ish, and then this was probably mid-March-ish, so it was probably,
So what did they decide to do at that point?
So then I stopped with the wrench and I just let it fill in.
Just let it do it by itself.
Just let it do it by itself and it filled in. It was the first time they'd ever seen it.
Whoa, dude.
Crazy. So they came up with this method.
This is crazier than the skydiving,
I
think.
This is fucking crazy.
They used a method that they usually use to fill in small chunks of bone, thinking, well, this is what we do with small pieces of bone, so maybe it'll work for this huge chunk of bone, maybe. But what really happened was it just did it itself.
It did, yes. So I wish I had an x-ray that I could bring, but my bone doesn't look like a nice, pretty bone. It's all like raggedy, raggedy looking.
Yeah.
Like it's all.
Is it still strong?
It's bigger than, it's wider than my other
it's
one.
It's stronger,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really strong. It's like not like smooth and nice. It's
Man,
like all raggedy.
You should get into fucking Taekwondo. You should be just kicking motherfuckers left, right, and center.
Well, my knee's not stable otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Just break it.
Yeah. Fuck that knee
just
up.
Just break it and it'll grow back bigger and you'll be like, sweet. Absolutely. This is my kicking leg.
Yeah, do you have any pins or anything in there right now?
That's another drama.
Yeah.
So basically 2.5 years after the accident was my final, like, you know, they made a plan for my wellness, right? So the last piece was plastic surgery. And my knee only bended a little bit at the time. So in the second plastic surgery that I had, the idea was to crank the shit out of it. And like literally they laid on it to try to get more room out of it to stretch that.
Jesus.
That piece that was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what happened was, so I went to see a plastic surgeon and basically they put tissue expanders in, which are like breast implants. I had 3 of them in my leg.
Tissue extenders?
Tissue expanders.
Now that disability bus dude's really fucking aching.
Oh, I was really
over.
Sexy yeah. then.
Yeah, like, let me grab that
knee implant.
Yeah, that knee titty of yours.
And luckily at the time, like I couldn't wear anything. Tearaway pants were like in style back then. So like I had my Reebok tearaway pants which were like kind of splashy pants and they were like my athletic ones. And then I had the nice champion ones that I pretended that they were my dress pants and my slacks. And I'd wear like a fancy top with my champion tearaway pants.
Oh, I had champion tearaway pants. I was 7 years old in 1997. I had a pair.
This is fucking hilarious.
So anyway, so I had the 3 breasts in my leg, and every week, I went to the surgeon, and he would inject saline in them. So it was kind of like my leg was pregnant.
Right. So it was real.
Oh, it got humongous, and it was really heavy. I was like, I should have wore shorts to show you. I wouldn't have cared. Because it was all. Remember, like, I had a skin graft, too. I forgot about that. So when they first closed my leg, I didn't have any flesh, right? So they took almost my whole left thigh. They took skin off of it to put it on my right thigh. So, like, when I had, like, the rod in there, like, it was stuck. Like, it was all stuck to the rod. Like, you could feel it. Even right here, you can feel here. I can feel the bone right there.
Right.
Because I'm missing a big piece, right?
Oh,
so
shit.
I had this big, it was like a big bowl, like a big crater in my left leg, right? And they were trying to fix it and make it better. And it was like my whole leg was scarred. So they had these tissue expanders. So I went every week for a couple months or 6 weeks. I can't remember. And they grew new skin. And then they took them out and they used this. And then the skin was used to close it. Yeah.
Right.
Shit.
So now I have this really big scar that looks like a big S near around my knee and then all the way up with this big crater in the middle. So, but it's a side story is like, when I was living in Toronto, like if I'd have shorts on in the summer or a skirt and a taxi driver would, you know, you'd be scooting out and your skirt or your shirt would move up. They'd be like, what happened to you? And I'd say, a skydiving accident. They're like, no, really, what happened? And I'd say, I was attacked by a shark.
Yeah.
And they would believe it.
And they're like, oh, yes, that makes much.
They're like, don't, like.
Way more believable.
Yeah, like, no. And people would like, did a shark attack you? Like,
Well, it's like that thing. You hear people say it all the time. Like, someone's got a gnarly scar. And you say, whoa, it happened. And they go, it's not a real cool story. I was just running and I tripped and broke my collarbone. And then they're like, you should tell people you got attacked by a grizzly bear. And you're like, I should. Or like someone goes, you should tell someone you survived a skydiving accident. And you're like, yeah, that's a good lie.
People didn't believe that, but that many people believe the shark. So
of
it just became easier to say the shark, right?
Yeah.
So
you were lying about an already gnarly accident.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't believe me.
Well, they wouldn't believe me.
You know, I will say sometimes I might have had a few drinks and the shark just sounded better.
Yeah,
sure. Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of hearing the same old wellness advice? It's time to dig deeper and listen to America Dissected from Crooked Media, the podcast that's cutting into the science, culture, and policy that shapes our health. From doctors fighting for their rights to the surprising truths about sunscreen, America Dissected dives deep into the state of health. Tune in every Tuesday for new episodes of America Dissected, available on all major podcast platforms.
After, when they did the plastic surgery and cranked on my leg to get me a little bit more bending, which was my last planned surgery, I think I was at like surgery seven, about 18 or 19 by then. Wow. I'm at like 26 now.
Yeah.
I caught a super infection, MRSA.
MRSA. We know about that.
You guys know about MRSA?
Is that flesh eating?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it is. It can be, right? It's like, it can be, but like super bugs.
So it's antibiotic resistant, right?
Yes.
And I'm allergic to penicillin. So the only antibiotic that could cure it is vancomycin, and I was allergic to it. So they...
How did they not take your leg?
So what happened was...
I'm assuming it was in your leg that it...
Yeah, it was in the leg.
What they had to do was they had to amputate the leg of a man who actually had his leg gnarred off by a shark.
They had to throw me.
It. So technically, I do have a leg that was shark attacked.
They had to throw me, ironically, into a bed of bees.
Yeah.
and the bee stings actually take away the MRSA.
And then I could only stay alive by keeping my adrenaline levels up all the time, so I had to start skydiving all the time.
Yeah,
constant skydiving.
So they put me in the hospital for 2 weeks and desensitized me. So the idea was, like, you know when people are allergic to, I don't know, pollen or cats?
Sure.
They get allergy shots, and really what they do is they give them a little bit of that over time so that their body becomes used to it again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they did with the vancomycin. They believed it worked, but it didn't. So I would go home, and I was on an IV pump 12 hours a day, right? So a nurse would come and put me on for 6 hours and then leave for six, and then a nurse would come for six. And I'm like, I had enough of the nurses. I'll do it myself. Because I had a PICC line. You know what a PICC line is, probably?
I've had a PICC line. I was actually just going to say, how were you not on a PICC line? But that makes sense that you were.
Yeah, I've had a few of those.
Yeah.
So, I started having hives and itchy, and I would go to the hospital and they would say, no, you're fine. They desensitized you. You're crazy. Go home. It got to the point where they were asked, like they were thinking I was addicted to healthcare. Right? Because this was my last surgery.
Oh, okay.
Right? Like this was when I was being blessed and released. So then I'm like, I'm not going back. And it got worse and worse. And like, then I took a ambulance to a regional hospital when I was like my head was all swollen and there was pus coming out of my ears. And they gave me a Tylenol and sent me home because it wasn't their practice because this was in Durham region. They couldn't send me to Toronto to my hospital.
Sure.
And I was like, I'm not going because they're just going to send me home. So I laid in the bed for 2 days and I wouldn't go anywhere. And then my brother-in-law came over and was like, no, we got to take her to the hospital. So a friend took me to the hospital. My head swelled probably twice its size. My ears were like cauliflower.
Oh.
My eyes were swollen shut. I could barely hear. There was pus everywhere. So I was swollen and I was like Barney.
Yeah.
So
how did they resolve it? What was the...
You know what? I really don't know. I went in the hospital and they took care of me for a few days. I never really asked all those things.
And then that was it. They're like, we figured it out.
I heard them like some of my organs were having problems and shutting down my cardiology stuff. Like, you know, the EKG or whatever.
Yeah. It's fucked that irregular. You could be like that fucked up and they're like, oh yeah, you're just addicted to healthcare.
I mean, yeah, but like I've never actually heard of that, but it sort of makes sense. Like thinking about someone who's in there for so long, like I'm sure that's a case. That's
absolutely.
Like,
that's
so wild.
After almost 3 years?
Yeah.
Right?
So,
and they all knew me at this hospital.
Right.
I just wanted to say that if you're hearing MRSA, MRSA, and thinking, what the hell is that? We did an episode on MRSA. It was our first episode we released in 2017, and it's called Flesh Eating Disease, a.k.a. MRSA, a.k.a. Superbug.
Yeah, there you go.
FYI. Mm-hmm. Crazy story.
So that's when I really thought I was dying and I came to terms with death. That's when I
that infection.
Yeah, because remember earlier you asked when I was flying if I had a moment. I readied myself for death, especially when I woke up and my mother was there from Cape Breton. Like, they're not going to fly her up unless there's a real problem.
Right.
Right?
Because that can be deadly, like, very
just
quickly.
Period, yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember hearing the pharmacologist next to me saying that she hadn't seen anything progress like this before because it didn't affect my lungs.
Mm.
So out of all of this, wow. Which is
a lot.
So
a
many
lot.
More little instances and layers too, right?
What was the biggest, would you say, the biggest like emotional struggle? Maybe like including within the hospital or afterwards, you know, like long term. Like what would you say is the biggest like emotional toll that this has taken on you?
At the time, I would say that there's two things. One of them is at the beginning, especially, and probably for about 3 years, I disassociated my leg in some ways. Like there was me and then there was my leg. So if I would get up, I would get up and then my leg. Like it was almost as if my leg was something that tagged along with me, right? Like I really disassociated it from myself. My leg became its own being.
Huh. It's like something that you're taking care of that's separate from you. Like you're going, I take care of myself by this, this, and this. And these are all the things that I have to do for leg.
That makes a lot of sense though, because like the rest of your body is, for the most part, like healing functioning and at least healing and doing well. But this fucking leg is just like,
but in that way of thinking, was there almost this like element of it would just be better if it was amputated?
You know, people have asked me that because of the pain, and I would say no.
Mm. Well, look at you now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like now where you're at, you didn't walk in here with
I've lived an amazing, adventurous life, and I've done so many things with my life over the years that I never would have been able to do. Because if I would have lost it at the hip. And people die after that, man. Like, you don't, like, your legs pump a lot of blood, like, at the hip.
Yeah.
Like, a prosthetic would have been hard. It would have had to go right up my back. Like,
Yeah, the reason why I asked too is because, like, you talked about, like, I mean, saying that you disassociated with it, it kind of makes me think, like, okay, you were almost like, all right, if I lose this, then, you know, I'll be okay. Like, the rest of me is okay. I could handle life without this at this point, in that moment. And that's what it was kind of like sounding like to me, where it's almost become a burden to have it.
No, it was kind of like a baby that you carry around and that you love.
Right.
But I see what you're saying because you know what's really interesting. And I spoke to her recently about this. I have a little blog that I'm starting to do. I have my own little dream thing that I want to do. And I want to focus on inspiring stories. And so I was talking to this girl, her name's Sylvia. I bet you she'll listen to this. She was a twin and I used to babysit her when she was a little girl. And she has this, I have it written down. Basically her leg is really swollen and purple and like it doesn't circulate properly. And she gets like big sores on it and she has a lot of problems with it over the years. Mm-hmm. And you know, I talked about this with her the other day and she, a few weeks ago. And she I remember when she was like, probably 10 or 12, the doctors recommended that it be amputated and her mother wouldn't decide because she's like, I can't decide for her.
Right.
She has to do it later.
Yeah.
And I remembered, ever since this happened to me and I apologized for it to her and she said I didn't need to, but I remember thinking way back in those years, like this was probably 10 years before my accident, like, why don't they just amputate? Wouldn't her life be easier?
Mm.
Right. And there was me 10 years later in the same situation.
Mm. I think, I mean,
and now
really,
I get it.
Yeah. Also, it's just like, it all really just depends on, I think, the person and where you're at in your life in that moment. It's like, if I, for example, if someone who I know currently is waiting for her second double lung transplant, she's been on a list for fucking ever. She still hasn't gotten it. And she's waiting and waiting and waiting, and hopefully it's just around the corner. She's going to get the second double lung transplant.
How old is she?
She's younger than me, so she's like 20, I think Tara's what, like 26? 25, 26?
I think so, yeah.
Somewhere around there, maybe 24. Somewhere 24 to 26, I'd say.
Because Elspeth got a second
pair. Exactly. Yeah, there you go. So
a third pair.
Someone waiting to get their lung transplant, the second set, and they're so ready to do it. And I'm sitting here, and I totally commend her on that.
Have you had any?
No, I haven't. And part of me is like, maybe I never would choose it. Maybe I would never choose it. So like when I hear that someone makes that decision to do it, I go, yeah, I get that. But if I heard someone who went, no, I'm not going to do it, I would also I get it. I get
that. And you respect it.
It really just depends on, I think, like the time in your life and what's going on in your life and
the support that you have.
And I bet you if you did decide to amputate and you were sitting here today with an amputated leg and you had a prosthetic.
If I would have made it, I probably would have been just as happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I would have did all the things that I've done in my life. I've had so many amazing, unique things happen to me. Mm. The way I've chosen to live my life and the things that I decided to make a priority. As crazy as it sounds, I don't have regrets. I don't think I would change it because it's brought me to where I am today. The only regret I have is that I wasn't able to have a baby.
So that was the case.
Well, to me, fertility is bigger than, I never had tests or anything, but we tried, it didn't work. To me, fertility is bigger than that. For me, fertility is also about my ability to carry for 9 months and the pain. For me, it's also about, can I take care of an infant? Like, what if the house is on fire and I'm alone? I can't take that baby and run out in the middle of the night. So for me, the issue was a lot big, like, it's not just can you conceive, right?
It was much greater than that.
Yeah, the ability to have a child, it goes further than if you can conceive.
Yeah.
But I'm the best aunt in the whole world.
Like, I bet. You're that aunt.
Yeah, I'm that aunt. Like,
you're the aunt that's letting the kid wrench your fucking leg, crush your bone.
When you're 2 years old. Like, yeah. I'm the aunt that, like, I can't, like, I went to Halifax West for a basketball game a few weeks ago. Well, probably in February, and I heard Auntie Carol. I'm not related to any of these kids,
right?
It's like Auntie's my brand, right?
Yeah, right.
So, it is
brands on point right now.
You know, that's like sweet. Now we're planning a trip that I don't want them to go on one of those dangerous S trips. So we're doing Auntie Carol adventures for their grad trip, like you know. So you know, I have other things in life that I've done that are really.
What do you do for work? What do you do for a living?
I work for charities. I do fundraising. I'm a professional fundraiser for a living. Okay. So, I've basically worked in two different sectors. One is health research, mostly through cancer.
Right.
That doesn't surprise me like one bit.
And the other one, which is what means the most to me, is helping people from poverty. So I've worked in homeless shelters in downtown Toronto, like where the busiest drugs and sex trades are. And then it got a little dangerous there after 3 years. So then I went to like Jane and Finch where the gangs were and worked at a youth shelter there in fundraising and management. Mm-hmm. I worked at a social service agency here, and I just recently started working at Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, I love it there.
Yeah, so come for a build.
God. Sweet.
Yeah, they're so great.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to be there. You know, housing has always been something that's been at my core, and I really believe that when people have a home to live in and a home to call their own, it really makes a difference and it really makes lives more stable. So that's what I do.
Human right in Canada. It's in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah, that's part of it. And you know, the Liberals, one thing I'm really excited they did, there's a 10-year housing strategy for the first time. Ooh. So it's huge. Yeah.
There was a TED Talk when Jer spoke at TED Toronto, there was a TEDx Toronto, one of the talks was about housing being in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and basically the disconnect between that being in that document and what we do about it.
Did it go in? I know there was advocacy for it to happen. I never looked like.
Yeah, I think that
they made it a human right.
I think
right,
that it was in that it was added, and that was basically the point
of part of the talk.
That was the point of the talk.
That's what I do, and I volunteered for a lot of things. I've been on boards, and
I'm really curious because you mentioned you said like I. Even now today, like I couldn't, you know, chase a little one around the house or something like that. But when I walked into the room, you were already sitting down here on the couch. Like what is life like right now?
I can walk, of course. Yeah. I have a limp. I have one leg longer than the other. Most of my shoes have a shoe lift. It depends. Sometimes I don't want to wait. I just want to wear the friggin' shoes.
Yeah, right.
I can walk. I can walk a good distance. I can't run. My right leg, you know, I'm missing a big chunk of my quadricep. I have a lot of pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like constant. Do you do anything? How do you manage that?
I gave up painkillers. I just had enough of them a while ago. I just threw them in the toilet. Right. Yeah. I had enough of them.
Have you tried the cannabis train yet?
I The CBD I've tried, and it's a first for me because I didn't find it worked. It might work for other things, right. But it didn't work for me. Maybe, but I will say, like, if I take someone THC, it's nice to really relax, and it'll take my mind away from it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's diversion.
I've always wondered about cannabis because I mean, there's a big,
not that I do it a lot, but when I have the odd time, I'll do edible or something.
Yeah, because I mean, when I was again doing my bro science thoughts on what cannabis was, I always thought, well, is it actually that it kills the pain, or is it that it makes
you're distracted
you
from
is
it.
That it distracts your mind to the point where you don't?
I remember you said that once, and I was like, whoa, bro, is it? I don't know.
There is an aspect to that, but for some people there are
out once we sit down with a real pro cannabis.
That's right, which we haven't done yet, which is kind of crazy.
I can imagine like people with fibromyalgia or maybe with other things, but for the bone pain, I don't know.
It's pretty deep pain.
There's so many different types of pain and where it comes from.
I got pins in there. They're at them with drills. Come on.
Jesus.
Well, I've got two questions. One's a two-parter. So three questions. The first one is, would you ever skydive again?
No.
Okay, good.
Think it's necessary.
I don't know if you'd be allowed. You got the biggest thrill can get.
If I make it to 80, I might do it.
That would be fun.
If I make it to 80, I'll call you guys and we'll go.
I would love it.
If I make it to 80.
I'm not going to lie. I that would be super crazy, but how wild of a story would it be if your parachute didn't open at 80 and then you definitely just died?
That'd be okay. I made it to 80.
Yeah, you'd be like, hey, you know what? Like, it didn't kill me the first time. I'm 80. I lived a good life. Like, honestly, I mean, in my realm, we've talked about this a lot. In my realm of what would be the best way to go, I think switching off like a light switch would be the best way.
I agree. My mom had a stroke 6 years ago, and she has aphasia, and she's paralyzed and bedridden, and it's torture every day. I'd rather just switch it off too.
Absolutely.
My views about life and death have changed a lot over the years, especially in reflection with this.
Well, what would you say, having said that, what would you say this accident, what would you say is the biggest thing that it's taken away from you?
What has it taken away from me? So the last 6 months have been a little bit of transition for me. When I hit the 20th year, it kind of brought back emotions that I didn't expect. I think what it took away from me, and when I watched that video for the first time in, almost two decades, it took away the girl that I was. Mm. And I'm the same in many ways, but it took away from me that potential of what that girl could have been. And it wasn't probably until these last few months that I grieved that loss. I was so focused on being positive and making the best of everything that I never took the time to grieve. And the last few months I took some time and I grieved.
Did that happen because this video was like recently uprooted? Was it not?
I've had it in a drawer for 20 years.
And so you watched it for the first time
in 20 years. I watched it twice before. Yeah.
A few months ago.
Yeah.
And that's where all this is. That's where, because there's quite a bit of media around the video.
Yeah,
and,
I released it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Holy it made fuck, it like to Australia Carol. And they want to interview me in London, ITV. And I'm going there for a wedding in September and I might be doing that then.
Wow. Crazy.
I've been on Jenny Jones in the US.
Jones.
Yes. I was supposed to go on Oprah.
Crazy.
Whoa. Like when they called, I was like, whoa, who the fuck is this? Because it's not Oprah.
Yeah.
And I was at work. And anyway.
You get a school.
But it's actually Harpo Productions. And we just want to have you in to speak to it. And you're like, you're not Oprah.
But I was supposed to go September 12th, 2001. So it was canceled because of September 11th.
Whoa.
Oh, no way.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So I've done a lot of media. I've talked to CBC many times. I'm,
Well, in that grief that you just went through. Is there a sense of relief through that grief as well, or is it?
I felt like I needed to grieve that girl because I looked at the video and the fall I didn't have a problem watching. It was, and I never watched before ever, even when I watched it 20 years ago. I never watched myself before the video. I refused to.
Right.
I didn't want to see myself. I see my life in two parts, like
right,
act
at the very
one and act two.
At the beginning of the video, there's like, there is, you can see you standing with the your
friend.
Yeah.
And I was excited and talking about going. And I couldn't face that before because I wonder if that girl was lost.
Right.
So part of that, of grieving that loss, I think, was watching that. And it took, you know, all last year I had an emotional time with it, which was rare for me. But now that I'm past it, I don't think there's anything I regret. Like now that I think I regret not grieving sooner, not allowing myself to go through those emotions. But otherwise, no, because I don't know if that girl, I mean, she was hardworking and would do things, but I don't know if that girl would have found what I found.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what would you say that this entire experience, what was the biggest thing that it's given you?
Faith in myself, faith in other people. And I really believe that, I mean, we have to be realistic, but we can achieve most things that we want to. I really, you know, the biggest thing is faith in myself, to know that if something isn't working, change directions. I mean, listen to my story. We talked about they thought this was wrong and then we did this and then this was wrong and then we do that. Like, if something's not working, make it right. Change directions. Don't. And I think that my life's a lot like that.
Yeah.
Too many people get they stay in this on course because they feel they should, or they feel
they're afraid of change.
Yeah, like I was recently looking for a new job, and my last job I was only there for 2.5 years, and other jobs I'd usually be like 3.5 years, 4 years, and you know, they were worried about that. But it's like this next, I'm not a millennial obviously, but they change jobs every 3 years or so. Like, do you want someone for 10 years that's not happy or not engaged? Like, and I've changed to find what's right for me, or to find better, right? Yeah. Every time it's been a promotion or, you know. I don't take situations where I don't feel like I'm moving forward. I don't stay in them.
It's kind of a common theme through most of our episodes, where the hardship that someone faces with, whether it's an injury or an illness, is commonly a gift, because it shows them the impermanence of life, which then leads to freedom to make the choices that work for you, and the make a life choices that allow you to be yourself and be authentic more of the time. And it's almost like people who don't go through life, that don't have a major accident, don't have an illness scare, it's like they just might not get that snap, that snapshot that makes them think, shit, life is short, or life is
important.
Life is important, and I shouldn't squander this opportunity.
I don't necessarily think it's short. Sometimes I think it's long.
Yeah,
but I think it's too important. I think, you know, we have this life to live, and I think it's so important that we have to do things. I've done other risky things, like, well, you know, while I was in rehab 3 years, every summer I would just go to Wonderland every week with all kinds of kids and go on roller coasters. Yeah. Like, they all knew me because I was bored and I had nothing else to do. Or 10 years ago, I went backpacking in Costa Rica with my friend. And we were in Monteverde, which is like the northern end of the country, in the cloud forest, like way, way, way up there. Mm-hmm. Like, and she was going ziplining up in the clouds, and I wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm. And it was this 8-year-old.
You're like,
but
that
I did
other
it.
Thing.
I did it. I had a video of it on Facebook.
That's sweet.
And I wasn't. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I made the guy go with me across the first one, and I never felt so free in all my life. When I got to the other side, I'm like, I win.
Yeah.
Finally win. Like, it was a really big emotional moment for me.
Sweet.
I win. But when I was in Costa Rica, I had this big bubble start growing on the side of my leg. And then it burst, and it just kept.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Was it like a cyst?
It turned out MRSA came back.
Whoa! What the fuck?
Whoa! Surprise and twist.
10 years after the accident.
Oh, my
so
God.
So, I took, you know, and it's funny because I went to a doctor in Costa Rica and he told me exactly what it was. And I can't. You should see your face.
Fun. I can't do it anymore. I can't keep going like this.
And it took, like, 2 months for them to diagnose it here because they kept on sending me home saying it was fine. I'm like, no, you have to do this. It's a fistula. Anyway, so then they gave me a surgeon that was the back specialist, but when I left Toronto, I told my surgeon, who do I see here? And they wouldn't let me see the surgeon. They're like, you don't get to demand your surgeon. I was like, yeah, you wait and see. So I called my surgeon in Toronto, and the next morning I got a call. Hi, this is, you know, I don't want to say the doctors because...
What does it rhyme with?
What? Then what they did was they took the hardware out of my right leg, and I was off for 3 months. And remember, I was allergic to vancomycin.
Right. So you can't just, like, get the drug.
They had they found some trial in the U.S. It was $16,000.
Jesus Christ.
Luckily, it was covered through my benefits. And, yeah, there's always ongoing sagas, right?
Yeah.
Tim, I feel like,
dude, round two mercy. That's life, right? Crazy.
I was really blown away by your answer to the question of what this has given you, and it really resonates really deeply with me. So thank you for that. But the last thing that I was curious about, and I've been wondering this question for like the last 10 minutes, and now I just lost it. Okay, wait one sec. Okay, so you mentioned that you have this new thing, a new project that you're working on right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if you want to share what that is about.
I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
Maybe you can share a link or something with me when I get it ready.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, it's not in pretty enough yet to... Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Mm. Well, Carol, I want to say...
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much for... coming in and doing this.
Thanks for having me.
This was an absolutely fucking wild tale. And the fact that you're sitting here and able to share that with us and the thousands of people that are listening to this is, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that, you know, you can tell that story with such cheer and mm-hmm. such levity.
Yes.
But also appreciating how fucking hard that is.
Yeah. Of course.
This is fucking crazy, man. This is crazy episode.
You've met a lot of people. You have your own health issues. Attitude is absolutely everything. And you know 100%. What else is? Letting yourself depend on other people.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, that's a lesson that I like to rely on other people, whether it's in your life, health, or whether it's in your work.
Mm.
Let yourself rely on other people. We don't have to be everything.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you so much.
That is it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed that. We'll be back next week. It's going to be tough to top this one.
Mm-hmm.
But as always, we'll be back with another fantastic episode. And in the meantime, head on over to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, rate us, review us. The reason we ask for that is because it helps keeps us on the iTunes charts. We've kind of been on the comedy charts within the top 100, I think, since we started this thing, and it's really nice to be there. And the higher we are, the more people get to see what we're up to and hear crazy, amazing, beautiful stories like this one. Mm-hmm. So that would be really great. And if you want to help us financially, we would always, always appreciate that. We could use it.
Yeah, you can head over to patreon.com/sickboy and contribute there. A big thank you to everybody who has supported us in the past. You've helped us do a lot of amazing things. And to everybody who will support us in the future, we thank you for your help because it goes a hell of a long way.
And as always, a big thank you to Donovan Milkshake Morgan for the
bring it to the
smooth,
yard.
Creamy audio engineering that he did on this episode. You guys weren't sure if I was going to pull that together, but I did. Just like Take Part pulled together this amazing song that we use for our intro and outro music. If you want to hear more of their music, you can check them out at takepartinthis.bandcamp.com.
Can Donovan put like in the background like doo-doo, doo-doo, doom.
What's that?
Doom, 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 doom.
My milkshake bring all the boys to the yard, and they're like,
is better than yours, and they're like, I literally had that in mind before I said milkshake.
Okay, wonderful.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
Carol.
And this is Sick Boy.
Bingo.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.